Off the Rails, the podcast that talks to you about all things millennial culture, from music to books and everything in between. And we're always going to go off on tangents. So welcome. I'm one half of your host duo, Imogen Marshall, and...
And I'm Maddie, the other half.
Yes. Oh my God, what a week. I feel like, well, peep behind the curtain, we've recorded a lot of these in advance before we launch. But this, I guess, was the week that country music in Nashville kind of exploded.
Oh yeah, a lot has happened this week. Some good, some bad things. Should we focus on the good things first?
Yeah, let's focus on the good things. How are you? How's it been?
I'm good. I've had a good week. I really love that Brothers Osborne came out after so long.
And, I know.
Which is a bit touchy subject, because you think of, like, even when Little Big Town released Girl Crush, and that wasn't even about lesbianism, the kind of backlash that got on radio.
But isn't that crazy to think of?
Yeah, but the amount of support that he's gotten, and I'm like, yes, Nashville is moving forward, country music is moving forward.
I mean, I did a post on Off the Record about it, and I kind of was basically focusing on whether Nashville's ready for change. And I'm so happy with the response he got, you know, the overwhelming love and support from artists. I'm nervous still to see. I mean, he did an interview, I think it was on Ellen, and he talked about, you know, rural America and the response. They don't know. That's the scary thing, is the unknown. They don't know what it's going to be like for them now in terms of their career. But I'm so happy about it. This is the only way to shift the dial. And I felt really emotional.
I did as well. I absolutely love Brothers Osborne. I love their music. I love them as brothers. And then the fact that he got so much support from his family, he got so much support from, I think, just the general country music community. Oh, it was so lovely to see, like, everyone's rainbow emojis on Facebook.
I know. And I just felt like, I mean, with everything happening, we will get into it a little bit, but it's one of those things that, you know, one of the things when you sort of say you like country music is, my watch is going. When you say you like country music and people kind of think of the hillbilly, like, kind of antiquated kind of notions of it in the past. And I think that's partly because of how historically it's been very overwhelmingly white, very overwhelmingly male, and very overwhelmingly straight. And to see that dial shifting is amazing. It just makes me so happy. And so little step forwards, like, look at how far we've come even since the days of, like, you know, Chelly Wright. Have you ever seen the documentary?
No.
So she did a documentary basically on her coming out. I think it was back in the 90s, and how every door in Nashville basically shut against her when she came out. And it's just amazing to think that that's not going to happen this time, hopefully. So yeah, it's been a good week overall. Personally, how's your week been though?
Personally, how's my week been? My week has been busy with reading. It's been busy with waiting for this snow to come, and it has come. Like, it's some decent snow today.
Mine's not decent. Mine is literally, like, it was snowfall when I was outside in a sweatshirt. I was like, this is not snow. This is a pitiful excuse for snow.
Finally got snow, and I finally understand now why, like, children in classrooms get distracted by snow, because now I'm spending my whole day distracted by snow. Yeah. As well.
look out the window, it's amazing. Oh dear.
Outside world, I feel like, not to be dramatic, but I will be dramatic. I feel like my all of lockdown has been like Cloverfield Lane, and I've finally popped back up and it's snowing, and it's quite magical. As like Lorelai Gilmore from Gilmore Girls says, like, oh, I love snow, like, magical things happen in the snow.
Oh, I love that.
Well, how's your week been?
It's been good. I feel like it's been, well, obviously I finished up my quarantine, so it was really nice to leave the house yesterday. I was like, oh my God, the outside world's changed. It's amazing. I feel like, yeah, it's been I mean, I think everyone's just kind of done, but it's really nice seeing the vaccine, how well it's doing in the UK, and like hearing, you know, that we're ahead of like all the predictions, and like fills me with hope. So I am getting excited. I think with everything going on in Nashville, obviously working with country music and stuff, I feel like I sort of not took it like, but it's been weighing on me a little bit, like thinking through. So I feel like I've been very in my head this week, kind of thing. I mean, should we get into it? Talk about the Morgan Wallen stuff and cancel culture?
Well, it's just very... Here's my issue with it, and I think we spoke about this a bit before we started to record.
Wait, should we just do context for everyone who doesn't know?
Yeah.
So for everyone who doesn't know, Morgan Wallen, who obviously at the time of recording, and also I will have someone that I actually really like their music, but you got to separate the music and the artist, got the number one album in America right now, and he's still got six of the number one top 10 iTunes singles in the US chart. He has this video surfaced of him basically doing a racial slur. He said the N-word on camera, and he has since been suspended from his label, dropped by his booking agent. 400 plus radio stations in the States aren't going to play him, and CMT is also not going to stand behind him. It's been a lot. There's been a lot on social media, and I think that's been sort of what's been heavy about the whole thing. And it's interesting that something that is, for me, very black and white, don't say that. Racism is, there's nothing, that word is so loaded for the black community, and it's something that the white people will never understand just how painful and just how painful that word is, because we have never walked in their shoes. And I think what I found difficult is seeing the sort of support for people saying it was one mistake. It was not one mistake. He's made three mistakes in the past year. And seeing the support for people saying that he's made a mistake, and then seeing the hatred that Mickey Guyton has been getting, that is what I've just found overwhelmingly horrendous, to be honest.
Yeah, I absolutely adore Mickey Guyton. As an artist, her work, just her personality as well. And finding more openness in her music that she's working towards concerning racism in America, especially with like Black Like Me. That's
that is such an important song. And also, side note, I've actually spoken to Mickey, and she's just as lovely as she always appears. She is one of the nicest people I think I've ever interviewed. She was so sweet. So...
Exactly. And I think that song is just very current. It's very, I'd still say at this time, still got quite a vulnerable song to put out there while the movement is still evolving, I think, and I'm still evolving. And then I feel like her releasing it doing so well on radio was such a good few steps forward for the genre. Yeah. And Morgan has kind of reeled those steps back in with this quote, little mistake.
Yeah, and it's difficult because there's something in me that does believe that people should be able to learn, and they should, that people can evolve and people can change. But I think we were talking about this earlier, was that I do think the country industry needs to take a very strong stance on it because of historically how problematic they've been as it's been as an industry, and how white and straight and white, straight, and what's the other word?
White, straight, and Christian.
Yeah, white, straight, and male it's been. And I think that because of that, I think that is one of the reasons why it can't just be a slap on the wrist, go on your way. It needs to be more than that.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope that the good thing, because I like to think like there's something good to come out of every bad thing. I hope that the good thing to come out of this will be them the country community, not just to review Morgan, but just to review everyone. Because I think we were speaking about it before the podcast of this is a very out there thing to say, but there are little hints of racism kind of threading through particular country artists where they might be performing a song but they'll have a Federal flag behind them.
I just found it so interesting seeing how, like, you know, Mickey's gone off social media and the hate that she's receiving is just, it's just not, it's not acceptable. I mean, I don't know how you feel about, I mean, I do, I firmly believe, not firmly, I do often have issues with the whole cancel culture thing, because I think quite often it is not about something as extreme as this. It's often to do with much, not smaller issues, but it could be a feud that's happened between two celebrities that people don't know the full story of. And I think quite often cancel culture is, I mean, these are people's lives we're talking about. And I can only imagine the mental health impact of just being basically told overnight you're cancelled. Yeah.
I'm interested to see if this will be a wake-up call for him in general, and just on how has he gone to move forward. Like, I know that his record label has suspended him, and I think rightfully so. But how is he going to, if he does want to carry on being a country singer, how is he going to prove to everyone that he'd learned from this mistake?
It'll be a massive PR comeback tour. Mark my words, give it a year.
A lot of media training can happen through lockdown.
You do wonder sometimes, you're like, if you're in a position, just maybe just watch your words a bit better. But anyway,
it would also be quite difficult to, I just don't understand why he wasn't media trained before, even have some media training in some basic politeness, decency.
Yeah.
Before your debut album comes out.
It's just crazy. I mean, I think that if I'm honest, I think the fact that he's got 6 of the top 10 singles is pretty strong indictment of what's going to happen, which is he will make a comeback. Mark my words. I don't necessarily agree, but we'll see. I know you've got on the notes that Sivat Sia thing, so you have to tell me about that.
Oh, so Sia recently has come up with this new film called Music. And it is it tells the story of an autistic child who I believe her mother has just died, so her aunt gets custody of her, and her aunt is struggling a bit. She doesn't really know how to feel the needs of this autistic child. And the autistic child is played by Maddie. Oh, I forget what the girl's name is who does the dancing for Sia. Maddie's.
Oh God, I can't think.
It starts with a Z, but it's an odd name to pronounce.
Is it like Ziegel or something?
Yeah. So the character of the young autistic teenager is played by Maddie Ziegel. I hope I'm getting that right. He normally does all like the dancing in Sia's videos, like Chandelier. And it's kind of fire a bit because quite a lot of people have said that while it's good that Sia's bringing attention to the lives and behaviours and patterns of autistic children, why not give opportunity to have this role played by a true autistic actress and support the community that way. And then another backlash has just been the storyline in general of how there's this aunt that's struggling with an autistic child and music is the answer. Just putting her head on and listen to music is the answer, which the parent, guardian of any autistic child would know, that's not the answer. It's not that easy. It's not really a realistic representation of the struggles that not just the child goes, but that child's family as well. So it's got quite a lot of backlash, this film.
Interesting. I do think there was another film that was released where it had similar, oh God, I'm gonna have to edit this bit. I'm trying to think what it was.
I think it's just about how,
well, I mean, on a lesser level, I know exactly what I'm thinking about actually. There does beg the question sometimes when people are casting films, why they do it. because you looked at, for instance, I always think of La La Land. Why the hell they put people up who were like, why you'd put two big actors in the role of two struggling act, like it was a good chance to break some new talent.
It reminds me a lot of when Mulan was being produced into a live action film, and there was a massive backlash that Jennifer Lawrence was supposed to be playing the role of Mulan. And obviously the backlash was because Jennifer Lawrence isn't Asian at all. She doesn't have Asian qualities. Doesn't have
Really?
Yep. And then
I never even realized that. Like,
Disney then fixed it, hired a more appropriate, newer actress, which really, really good opportunities for this new young actress. And I think that's kind of what Sia should have done as well. She wanted to show a greater amount of support for the autistic and special needs community, give them opportunities such as actually starring in your work.
That's actually it's a very, very good point. I mean, also, who better? It's that whole thing about own voices and, you know, bringing it from music to books. It's that whole argument around American Dirt last year, where I think quite often the issue isn't necessarily with the artist or with the author or whatever it is, but it's more about the structures around it. So for American Dirt, my issue was not with the person who wrote it. She has her own story to tell. It was more, my issue was around the fact that the publishing industry doesn't publish enough literature by own voices people. And it's kind of the same with this. It's like, if there were more films and music videos and things like that portraying a bigger breadth of people and representation, including autistic people, then we would all have less of an issue. But when that gap is there and it's not, and it's a prime opportunity to fill it, that's when the issue is.
Most definitely.
Well, okay, I guess we're going to talk about the happy birthday to COVID this year. How are you going to celebrate your 1 year COVID anniversary?
I'm going to celebrate the same way I did when lockdown first got announced. I'm going to put on a face mask and have some gin.
Love it. I was thinking maybe, you know, bake some banana bread for its birthday. Maybe we'll make some cocktails. Maybe get some puzzles out, sing it a birthday song. No, I'll probably sit at home reading, because why break the mold?
Yep. Try and read Duolingo.
Oh my god, yeah. Well, I'll tell you about my new obsession if we're bringing it into like what we've done in quarantine and what we've changed and all that kind of thing. Notion is my new thing. I love it. I am obsessed. If anyone doesn't know what Notion is, it's like a productivity tool, and I've literally spent the entire weekend setting it up, and I feel like a TikTok person.
How does Notion work? I've never heard of Notion before.
Anyway, that's our name. So what weird habits and hobbies have you taken up in quarantine? Also, what do you think? I feel like I'm interviewing you. What do you feel like, I guess we're going to talk about, what do you feel like you've changed at all? This year feels like the longest year ever.
Oh, this year feels like it's gone for 10 years. I feel like I've aged 10 years older as well. I went through some really weird phases at the beginning of lockdown. One of them was, I'm going to become the most active person ever, and I'm going to wake up at 6 o'clock each morning and go for a run. That lasted for about like one day, and then I was so knackered from that 6 o'clock run that I rested for the rest of the week. So that's just not going to happen. I'm still going to remain to be a...
I know all about the early morning wake-ups, because I got inspired by Olivia Mentor, which is a bad on paper plug. And she does this thing where she does like little circles. So you set your goals for the month, and then you do like 20 pre-7 a.m. starts. And I drew 20 circles. Has one been filled? No. We're now on the 7th of February. So I now need to wake up at 7 a.m. every single day for the rest of the month. Yeah. Don't think it's going to happen.
No.
Is it like a strong possibility that's not going to happen?
No, because... like, especially because lockdown is such a good time to like try and get into those better habits, because we're all spending so much time at home. But at the same time, gyms aren't open. It's quite difficult at the time. And then if I do want to go out for a run, I don't want to. I do this thing of I run until I see someone. So like I'll be running, and if I see someone, I then start to walk. And then I'll wait until they're out of eyesight and then start to run again.
But you're funny.
Very close in the village. So it's not a run and stop, it's run, stop, have a socially distanced chat. How bad lockdown is. And then run again and then repeat. And then I'll come back home and I'll be like, I've been out for like 5 hours. I only wanted to go for like a little small 3K.
This is amazing. I do think you've got to kind of take the little joys. I've never thought of myself as like a massive walker, but God, it is literally like the thing that keeps me sane.
Yeah.
I realize that I'm not quite sane still, but we're getting there.
What's one thing that you think you'll keep from lockdown? What's one habit you've developed?
Oh, that's a good question. Is it bad if I... Okay, actually, no, this is like not a thing that I will keep, because I think like if I'm honest, a lot of my lockdown like hobbies, like cross stitching, which I started doing recently, I'm not going to do that on a Friday night when this ends. But I would say on a more like sentimental level, like my appreciation for my friends, because I feel like I have a great group of girlfriends that I love to death. And they're all the most amazing people, think the world of them. But I think you do take for granted people. And that's the one thing that I think a lot of people will have not got, like will have get out of quarantine, like spending quality time with people. We're not going to suddenly be like, I'm actually, you know, I think we won't take for granted so many things. And I hope that that is the one thing I get out of it. How about you?
I think definitely the same. I definitely... I was in a very, very, very codependent relationship last year. I'm not anymore. But I need now being out of it, have I realised that I do have friends. I just wasn't making efforts to catch up with them.
Yeah.
I'll be on Zoom. I'll be like, oh, hi, how are you? And they'll be like, good, like, what's up with you? And I'm like, oh, I haven't seen you in like for like a few months. They're like, Maddie, I haven't seen you for like a year. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And I was like, oh, I've just been busy. And in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I haven't actually just been busy. I've just been with this.
The tunnel vision.
So now I have a thing of I have to catch up with at least 3 different people each week. So I'm always
catching. Oh my God. That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. And I'm quite proud of that. Trying to build
that. I love that. I also think mindfulness, like actually taking time to be like, I'm feeling crap and working out why, and then kind of trying to process through how to fix it. That's the other thing.
I'm hoping we're rather going to have 2 kind of outcomes of people come out of lockdown. People who are very, very patient. People who will kind of sit there.
I think everyone's patience has gone downhill rather than uphill, let's be honest.
Then you have the other kind of people that are going to be like, you know what? Life's too short. I'm going to do me. Don't care about anyone else's feelings. Let's go. 2 very, very different people. I feel like it's going to be very much a repeat of the hippie generation versus the parents. I'm more interested for that to see how people are actually going to interact with each other again.
Yeah.
Talk about lockdown, because I was like, do you hug? Do you do that weird like elbow thing? Or are people gonna be like shaking?
I'm gonna be fucking bear hugging people, and people are gonna be like, excuse me, and I'll be like, sorry.
No, but you know,
I'm not a health responsible.
You know, one thing I'm not looking forward to after lockdown.
Tell me.
Social-wise, is then it then means that the people I'm talking to on Bumble are gonna be like, now we can meet up, and I'm just gonna be like, oh. Yeah, because at the moment I can use excuse of it's a pandemic,
and then you're like, oh, I have to actually see you in person.
I actually have to put on makeup.
Oh my God, the day when I have to put on makeup. Actually, another thing, the importance I put on skincare. I feel like I've become the like skincare guru. I'm now like, right, assessing my skincare. Like, what do I need for my face? Have I spent too much money on skincare products? 100% yes. But all self-care. All self-care is all needed.
What's the most expensive skincare that you've bought during lockdown? And how much?
I'm going to tell you a funny story. So over Christmas I was like, you know, you get some money from your grandparents, and we're still young enough that we're still getting them, but Grace Atwood on the Brown Paper podcast has always raved about this cream called Augustina's Bardot. I think that's how you pronounce it. Anyway, so I ordered it, but I ordered it to my home address because I thought that I might still be isolating at home with my parents. Anyway, this is what arrives home. But by that point, it had taken so long to arrive that I'd come back to London. So my mother unwraps it and she goes, why the hell are you spending £100 on a moisturizer when you're 25 years old? You do not need this. The wrinkle properties, like you don't have wrinkles yet. So that was the most expensive thing. Did I return it? Yes, because I returned it because I don't want the judgment. But yeah, so that's my answer. I also get a lot of products through FabFitFun, that subscription box, which is obviously like really reduced down. So love that. What's your most bougie lockdown purchase?
Oh, my most bougie. I'm very much like you. I have a subscription to beauty products. Yeah. So I use Glossy Box because...
is it good?
Well, I want to have better skincare. I want to have like be more expensive with experimental makeup, but I have not the slightest clue. And that's kind of like my...
Where to begin?
My little starting box. And there's this moisturizer sample size that I really made use out of by this brand called Avant. Mm-hmm. And then it ran out at Christmas and I thought New Year's, I was like, you know what, I want to treat myself. I'm going to actually purchase one of these items from So the items I bought.
This is like confession booth. Maybe we need to do that as a segment, confession booth time. We're going to do that every week.
I've bought some really lovely affordable things from Glossy Box. Like I bought like a pineapple enzyme face scrub, coffee scrub for like body scrub. And then this moisturizer, that's 50 mils. 50 mils is not a lot. 50 mil, there's more mils in a glass of water than there is in a tube of moisturizer. This moisturizer, it came up on offer and I was like, oh, I'm going to get this at such a bargain. And the offer was £98. Originally, this moisturizer is £120 at 50 mils. And I seriously sat there and I didn't consider, is this worth it? I just considered how small amount of this moisturizer should I put on my face per night for it
to make it worthwhile. It's like if I put 1 milliliter on, that's like that much. Okay, that's fine.
I'm like, just a quick little dab that can last for like a few days. So I am currently waiting for the package.
We're gonna need an update next week to see how good that is and how fractional of a milliliter you're putting on your face. I'm putting that in the notes for show notes for next week.
Most definitely. I just really hope that like my mum isn't listening to this as I'm being on the phone to her and being like, I'm finding it really difficult to like be able to afford pasta sauce.
And you're like, I can't afford my pasta sauce, but I can afford this £98 moisturizer, so it all evens out.
Yeah, I'm like, mum, like people see my face on Zoom, they won't hear my stomach. So I'll be fine.
You know what? That's the most accurate thing I've heard all day. Perfect. Oh god, right, have we done quarantine? Yeah, I think we've done quarantine. Right, our last segment. So what have you been reading this week and what have you been loving?
So this week I finished reading Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid. It's the first kind of book I've read where the layout is completely an interview script, which I thought at the beginning.
How long did it take you to get into? Because it took me like a chapter or so to like get into the vibe, but as soon as I did, I was so engrossed with it. But it did take me a minute to kind of be like, okay, this is how we're doing it.
Yeah, it took a few chapters, especially because they introduced so many characters. Yeah. But then after a while you start to recognize them a bit. What I really like about Taylor Jenkins Reid is the plot twists.
Oh my god, she's the queen of plot twists, honestly.
Plot twist in this one, I won't spoil it, but it is so subtle but so effective.
I think that's why it's good, because they're subtle plot twists, so you're not like, you don't think my whole view of the story is, well actually your view of the story changes, but they're not, it's not like, oh my god, that's so left field.
Yeah, But it's quite subtle. I would say this plot twist in Daisy Jones and Six was a lot more wholesome than as in The Seven Husbands of
I found that one quite difficult.
The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, the plot twist in there was very, very difficult to read.
Yeah.
But the one Daisy Jones and the Six was just made me pause for a minute and I just thought, oh, that is so lovely. And so I really, really enjoyed that. I know that there's rumours about it being produced now into a film, but it's been postponed for quite a lot of times.
I don't know what you think, but I think there's going to be a huge amount. There's been so many rumours like this thing's been turned into a thing, TV show, and this thing's going to be turned into a TV show, and this is going to be production. But so many things get, like, the options get bought and then nothing happens with them. But B, also, I think there's going to be actually just like a huge amount of content that's come up out during lockdown. There's been a huge buzz around it. There was a huge buzz around Daisy Jones and the Six. But I think that by the time they actually get round to potentially changing it into a TV show, the buzz will have died down enough that they maybe won't feel the need to do it.
That's the thing, because I've been looking at the cast list for Daisy Jones and the Six.
It's actually got as far as a cast list. Yeah. Okay, so it's quite far along.
They've been very, very smart with it, because you do very much get Fleetwood Mac kind of vibes. And the lead...
Wait, now I'm looking.
The lead role for Daisy Jones and the Six is Riley Keough, which a lot of people might not recognise, but when you look into her family tree, she is the granddaughter of Elvis Presley. She is Lisa Marie Presley's daughter. So she kind of already has that kind of music link, which has just got to fascinate me.
I've just spotted who's the main lead, and I'm already hooked. Sam Claflin, one of my celebrity crushes. I saw him once by Kew Gardens. And I drove past and I was like, I smiled because I was like, oh my God, that's Sam Claflin. And he smiled back. So that's my story about Sam Claflin.
It's your claim to fame.
There you go. Yeah.
They fit the characters quite well. I'm interested to see how Suki Waterhouse is going to be playing Karen, because I haven't really seen Suki Waterhouse do a lot of acting. I know that she has done them, I just haven't seen any of her work. So I'm interested to see how she's going to act as Karen. I think that they have got it spot on looks-wise.
Though Camila. Interesting. I don't think I saw her like that. Because she's going to be played by Camila Moroni, who is an Argentinian-American actress. Of course, half the time their looks change up when they actually go into production and they'll dye hair and things. And I think I always saw her as a brunette. It's always weird. Well, we're going to do an episode at some point on the book TV show. Books versus TV shows and kind of discussions around some of them. But I loved Daisy Jones and Six, so I am so intrigued to see what it's like.
I'm interested to see how, because at the back of the book, the whole premise of the book is that they're having this massive interview because they've got this one standalone major hit album.
Yeah.
And the author has written all of the song lyrics to every single song that's mentioned. So I'm very interested to see how the songs are going to play out.
Yeah.
Going to actually sound like what I've imagined
it probably is going to be really difficult for some musicians, because obviously some of them, like, she's an author, she's not someone who is a songwriter, so she probably never kind of thought of them as being made into songs. So I reckon there'll be some artists who think, oh god, that's too difficult to make into this. You can imagine it's quite difficult. Cool, so what else have you been reading?
I'm at the moment, I'm halfway through Maybe You Should Talk to Someone.
Love it.
Which I find really fascinating about the story of...
Did you find it a bit heavier going then? Because I actually found it slightly heavier going than I sort of thought it was going to be.
There's been some parts and chapters I've had to fold a corner on and just been like, this hits a bit too close for home. I'm just going to put this...
I found exactly the same way.
Well, I'm going to do a Joey from Friends and put the story in the freezer so that the story doesn't continue and it freezes. Yeah. But it's the most... out there-ish, well, not out there-ish, it's the most different kind of storyline I've heard in a while of a therapist who is still treating patients but is still going to therapy herself. Things that she's realizing in her patients, and then also things that she's still not realizing in herself, but her therapist is able to. And I really, really like Laurie Gottlieb. Had quite a career. She started off in entertainment business,
Yeah, and
and
she's
then.
quite successful. So she worked on the set of ER and Friends back in the day. It's interesting seeing how her career progressed, actually.
And she also has a podcast called Dear Therapist, which has been really, really interesting to listen to. And I'm liking it so far. I'm one of obviously it's going to end with how she's able to see herself post breakup in a different light. I'm just still excited to see how she actually arrives at that point. What kind of books have you been reading this month?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I've read some quite dark stuff recently. We'll start off with the light. Obviously, we'll go from light to dark. So I finished Destination Wedding, which was gloriously wonderful. It was so Crazy Rich Asians, but set in India. Like, it was just about this girl who goes to her cousin's wedding out in Delhi, and it's just the characters are just so well written. They're all very distinct and just so hilarious. And I can just imagine anyone who has got quite a big sprawling family with lots of like dramatics would love this book. So I really enjoyed that. It's just a nice palate cleanser, and I think it's something that everyone would like during lockdown. I also read Real Life by Brandon Taylor, which it's been announced that he's got two novels in the pipeline, which I cannot wait for. I hope I didn't talk about this last week. I don't think I did.
I don't think you did, because this
No.
is new to me.
And it's about a black gay lab student in middle America, and kind of it is of the similar, I guess, similar ilk to like A Little Life, which is one of my favorites. It's very, I'd say, a very removed writing style. Like, you feel frustrated, you're like, feel something, why are you so emotionless? But it's kind of about his interactions with his fellow students, and it deals with race and a lot of other stuff. And I just think it's really, I'm trying to read more also fiction as well as non-fiction around back about racism, around racism and white fragility and all that stuff. So I felt like that's really helpful. And then I also read My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell, which was heavy. It is kind of almost like a rewrite of Lolita, in terms of it's about Vanessa Wise, who is a 15-year-old student, I think, at school, and she begins a relationship, in inverted commas, with her teacher. But it's kind of more, it reverts between her as an older woman, not older, but like probably like mid-30s, and her as 15, and kind of you see the obsession in the teenage mind, but also the devastating impact that that's had on the rest of her life and her relationships and how she carries herself in the world. So it was very, I think it's very like trigger warning alert, because it's harrowing in terms of talking about abuse, and you kind of start off and you kind of view it as like not normal, but we've watched so many TV shows like Pretty Little Liars and so many things where they have, where students have relationships with teachers and it's normalized. And it kind of starts off in that kind of, you can kind of feel that it's a bit more normal, and then the more she gets into it, the more it gets graphic, and the more you're like, oh my God, this is actually horrendous. And yeah, so it was quite a eye-opening look into abuse, I guess. And then I'm reading at the moment Hood Feminism by Mikki Kendall, which is a difficult read, I'm not gonna lie, in terms of it's very uncomfortable. I think it's a really important book for pretty much anyone who thinks they're a feminist to read, because it was quite eye-opening about some things, which I'll do a proper review next week when I've finished it. But Well, I guess, do we have anything else we're looking forward to this week or excited about?
I'm going to maybe try and not tack on, or maybe try and listen to Demi Lovato's new YouTube series.
Interesting.
So Demi Lovato has a new YouTube series called Demi Lovato Dancing with the Devil. Mm-hmm. And it's her telling her recovery story over the past few years, because obviously there's been a lot of developments and a lot of relapses within her recovery so far. But the reason I'm quite torn, and I've seen many, many reviews also be torn about this, that this isn't the first time that she's told her recovery story. And I can see the two sides of this, of there is more to Demi Lovato than her recovery story, and there's only so many times and in so many different lights you can tell the same story. But at the same time, I do like that she does retell it in an up-to-date version for everyone else who is going through addictions, eating disorders, that you can relapse. You can relapse many, many times, but still overcome each and every relapse. So I'm excited to see what kind of new angle she's going to have on
interesting
recovery story.
Also, it's her story. If she wants to tell it how many times, she can tell it how many times she wants. She can tell it for 50 million times for all I care. It's her story to tell.
Yeah, and I love how she bounces back each time. So I think when she done another YouTube series about it a few years ago, and around that time she released Sorry Not Sorry, absolutely love. And then also this time she's also released a new single called What Other People Say, with her new short pixie pink haircut. Absolutely love it.
I haven't actually seen it.
And I feel like she just bounces back, and she bounces back really, really well each time. I think she's definitely someone who is able to put all of her pain into a really productive and positive, creative little funnel. So yeah, I'm going to try and catch up on that this weekend.
That is exciting.
What are you?
God, well, I'm going to finish this book, and then I'm going to start reading probably Transcending Kingdom by your Jesse, which comes out in March. So that's my week's reading. I'll probably just spend time reading 2 minutes. I find at the moment I'm finding it really difficult to focus on TV shows, so yeah, books are my way forward. So yeah.
I don't think anything has ever lived up to Bridgerton just yet.
No Bridgerton season 2, can't wait. Right, well, that's been our episode for this week. And Maddie, where can people find you?
I probably need to change my handle at some point, but at this point it's still going to be Mindelin 7, so it's basically and you're replacing an A for 7 because Mindelin 1 was taken for some reason. Imogen, where can everyone find you?
You can find me personally at Imogen L. Marshall, and you can find everything Off the Record at offtherecorduk.com. So thanks for listening. Bye y'all.